once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone numbers to call in here, if you're in East Bell County, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Maybe we'll actually get a call this hour.
I don't know. That was incorrect English. That's probably what ran people off. It's not the telephone numbers to call if you're in East Bell County. It's the telephone numbers to call, comma, or colon, if you're in East Bell County, 773-1400, and then...
I get upset when people talk about colons on the air. That's probably going to scare many people off.
There's 773-1400 is just a single telephone number. Yeah. It's not numbers.
It is numbers.
But it isn't a telephone numbers.
Most numbers, any number that's more than one digit is actually numbers, even though it's number.
But two of them are zero.
Two numbers are zero?
Yeah, 773-1400.
So that's the same number repeated.
But it's a zero, which is nothing.
Right. So you may not even need to hit that number.
And right now zero is a really important number, because what happened is prices over the last 30 days in the month of March in the Eurozone, neither rose nor fell at all.
Okay.
Which is a tremendous improvement over what they've seen consumer prices do over the previous 3 months as they fell. And so zero is the favorite number right now. Everybody's really happy about zero.
The personal income in the United States?
Yes.
Unchanged in March. Zero.
Zero. So we got zeros all over the place. Now,
okay, wait a minute. But ISM Manufacturing Index?
Yes.
Unchanged in April. Now, it's still growing. It's at 51, and 50 is not moving. But it didn't move from the place that it's moving.
But you have to say what the ISM is.
Oh, yeah. Well, it sounds better if I don't. The ISM is a manufacturing index. It's
which is very different from the ISI.
Right. And it basically, it covers... let me give you all of it. You can't just say it covers one or two things. It covers the different sectors of manufacturing in the United States, whether it's industrial or commercial or getting into a smaller scale, small business manufacturing.
It's basically an index of what's going on in the manufacturing world. Now, there is there's also a really good article in the Wall Street Journal. Factories across the United States appear to be increasing production.
Yes. And it's not, this is something important.
By the way, the ISM is the Institute for Supply Management.
Let me say something here really cool, because you said something that in an old school sense makes sense, in a new school sense not so much. Factories are increasing production.
In an old school sense makes sense?
Right, but doesn't make sense new school. Factories are increasing production because there's lots of little factories being made that have robotics in them.
Well, that's a major factor.
It is a major factor in factoring. You got to factor this into your factors, in your factories.
We have a caller on 773-1400 who's liable to insert some sanity into our discussion. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach.
Yes, go ahead. I was listening to your show when Jake talking about husband.
Yes?
Say that one more.
Go ahead.
Say that one more time. We had a
Austin.
Piece of...
He was talking about Austin.
Oh, yeah. So do you say I live in Austin? Yes, I do.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I think you switched him off.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us now?
We lost him. So I guess the phone thing...
Yeah, it's not fixed. Well, we could hear him. He just could not hear us. Yes, yeah. I do live in Austin. We thought the phone was fixed in here. We were told it was fixed in here, but it is not.
And apparently it's still having some problems. Anyway.
Yes, I do live in Austin, and really, yes, I do.
Yes, but he works in Salado, and I live in Salado. Neither of us live in Temple.
We mentioned several times.
From Temple.
Yeah, we've mentioned several times insanity on this program.
Okay,
once
again,
we're going to try
we
the
have
call.
A caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with a Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sorry about that. I've moved back where I can hear the radio, since okay. I'm not hearing you over the phone.
Yes, and that's the problem with the phone system here. Go ahead.
Yes, I was going to mention you were talking about the city of Austin requiring you to get all new faucets
to
prevent your
external faucets.
Hose water?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know city of Austin can be extra strict, so they may not actually allow this, but there are small add-on devices called vacuum breakers.
Uh-huh.
That you can just screw on to the end of your hose that are only like $5 or $6 a piece.
Well, I might just have to do that.
You can actually put them on the faucet itself. We have it in our house.
It screws right on the end of your hose bib and does that function. So
I would much rather have my own.
A bit of money just screwing that on yourself.
I'd rather have my own water filtration system, but I will do this. I'll go in on the way.
And I'll contribute to some of the insanity. It's something that I've heard you mention a couple times, and I've just not been in a situation to call because usually I listen to you on a delay when I'm working at night after I record the shows during the day.
You work with very large faucets, I get.
Yes, I do. I work at a water plant.
Well, I'm impressed.
That big, inefficient central water plant.
Yes, right. It is relatively inefficient because you spend a tremendous, we spend a tremendous amount of money and time and effort making water perfectly pure so people can squirt it onto the grass in the front yard.
Yes, that's why we ought to be using water about three times. Once to drink and in our sinks, once to flush our toilets, and the third time in the yard.
Yeah.
But what if I want to drink from my toilet?
Then you're a cat.
Well, that's the only problem.
Well, we've got to protect these people that keep drinking from their toilet.
That's
we've
right.
got to
that's
purify
right.
this water immediately.
Often you talk about communicating with some of your customers in Australia and wondering why it's tomorrow, but they can't tell you what's going to happen.
Right.
Right.
It's even worse when you really think about it, right? To go to Australia, you've got to go, fly off to the west, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, you can go east, but it's just further.
The further
unless
you go
work for
west,
a water plant, then you could go east.
Right. The further you go
like
west.
Like going to California.
Right.
California is 2 hours ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So not only is it tomorrow.
But sometimes you can get there before you left.
Yeah, but every time you move further west, it's getting earlier and earlier today until today becomes tomorrow.
Yes. You cross the international date line.
Right.
And today suddenly becomes tomorrow. But
until you go far enough, and then you go back in time again.
Now, this is really impressive. Once you cross the international date line, it's no longer tomorrow, it's today.
Right.
It's just
if you started just before midnight, you could go earlier and earlier today till today becomes yesterday, and then yesterday will become tomorrow.
One of the tricks that I tell to teenagers that causes them their eyes to cross and steam to start coming out of their ears is... You can see tomorrow today. You can see it.
Yes, absolutely.
For
about 6 hours.
Yeah,
each night.
If you, even before the night, if you can see the moon in the sky,
right,
and you can look up there and see the moon, or the light gets here from the moon in about 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a big travel distance as far as light goes. So we're looking at the moon, but the moon is in... Universal Standard Time, which used to be Greenwich Time, but now it's universal.
That's because it was Greenwich Mean Time?
Right, and nobody likes mean anymore.
Right.
It's very nice time. So Universal Standard Time, which means that it is on British time, which means that depending on what time
it's
of year it is, we're either 7 hours behind or 6 hours
it's
behind.
It's actually Universal Coordinated Time, UCT.
Oh, Universal Coordinated Time.
Which is also the University of Central Texas.
Currently, we are 6 hours behind Britain.
Right.
Which means that from 6 o'clock p.m. on, if you see the moon, you're looking at tomorrow.
Exactly.
One of the things that sometimes when I get to talking to people about science and... they have trouble, understanding things like speed of light and stuff. One of the things I always like to point out to them is that the sunlight that we're getting right now is 8 minutes old.
Right. Well, actually,
eight or nine minutes. Which in light time makes them old.
Right.
Or not at all old.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks for the call.
You know, that's the point. If the sun were to cease to shine, it just went out.
Uh-huh. We wouldn't know about
it for 9 minutes.
Right. It would be... But then we would know about it a lot.
Yes, we would. But, and what it would take to make it cease to shine it really interesting.
A day without sunlight is night. Right.
Got it. U.S. factories actually are running along at 51.5. It's unchanged
right,
from
April.
Right,
that's what I said. The ISM manufacturing index.
Was unchanged.
Unchanged.
But this is the point. Anything above 50 indicates growth.
Right, so we're still growing.
But there's a but there's an interesting little conundrum here. The number of people employed in the manufacturing industry dropped in that same period, which means we're becoming more efficient. And there's this conundrum that economists face.
That's what I was talking about, the old school, new school. There's a lot of robots being employed
right, but this
now.
Is the conundrum. And by the way, it's I'm going to get to China, hopefully, this hour.
Well, that's a long trip.
It is, but it's important to discuss it. If, no matter how efficient we get at manufacturing things, and that's what we try to do, we try to manufacture things more and more and more efficiently so that
right.
we can cost less to build them and we can charge less and still make a profit.
Eventually, we'll be having these things built.
Everything for nothing.
In our house with our own 3D printer, we will just buy the
right.
plans. We will buy the design to create the thing in our house. We're not there yet.
This is one of the great conundrums. Somebody's got to buy the things that the manufacturers make. And if we become more and more and more efficient and use fewer and fewer and fewer workers to get things made and to the market, it's sort of a self-defeating cycle, except for the fact that even though it's always been a self-defeating cycle, it's always worked. And this is one of those great mysteries of economics. Is you can make more things with fewer people, and somehow the fewer people, the general population has more money with which to buy them.
Right, because
and
they get better jobs.
It really becomes interesting. But this is the key I want to get to.
Okay.
You got to have people being inefficient to buy the stuff.
Yep.
And this is a problem that China is facing. There's a couple of points we can get into in as much detail or little detail as you guys are interested, but China's GDP, and I mentioned this last week, but still it's really
right.
important to focus on as more information came out about it this week.
A lot more information came out about it this week.
China's GDP was probably around 3% in 2014.
And they said
growth.
So they said 6.9 or 7.2 at any given quarter.
But the point is, since their economy is a lot smaller than ours, in absolute dollar terms, they grew less than we did last year. Now, that's
right.
very significant. It's been a long time since that's happened. The United States economy had I think you used the word tepid.
Yeah, I like
growth
the word tepid.
Last year, about 2.5%.
Right, not last quarter. Last quarter,
but
not
I mean,
last year.
Last year, though, it was still tepid at 2.5.
Yeah.
The point is that the United States economy at growing at 2.5% is growing faster than the Chinese economy at 3%. But here is the kicker. I was thinking it was infrastructure, and that is having an effect on
that is an effect.
But this is what came out in, it was mentioned in the Financial Times and the Economist this week. The secret to the Chinese high growth economy has been cheap labor migrating from the villages and from being behind oxen into the cities, and it is shrinking. The great migrations back and forth have been shrinking at a very high rate of shrinkage.
That's a technical term there, rate of shrinkage. We call that negative
right.
growth in the economics world.
It really boils down to the fact that the Chinese system of building big skyscrapers and everything else has been
right.
forcing, marginalizing, and forcing out the very people that caused the miracle.
Right.
And we think this, and economists are looking at this and saying the Chinese miracle may be over at this point. And we got a really good model for that because it happened in Britain during the Industrial Revolution. People moved from the village.
Happened in
to
the United
city,
States, too.
And the difference is that the Chinese, of course, at this point are robotizing.
Uh-huh.
But they are basically going to be on a level playing field with us again very shortly. And they don't have the advanced infrastructure that we have, which could cause their whole system in China, because they don't have a democracy,
right,
is based on very, very high rates of economic growth. If they can't maintain the high rates of economic growth, may see a breakdown.
Another key here, and I've got a question here about last quarter's annualized growth as well, so we'll get to that. But the key, one of the fascinating things about China is people hear about free market and they want their They want their financial growth rate at a certain amount. They're giving jobs. You know, there's got a big growth. It sounds like it's going capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
Only a little bit. It is still a communist country.
It is.
And while that sounds like I'm quibbling.
Binko communist.
Right. It is impossible for you to own your own intellectual property in China unless you are very, very wealthy. And then you have to protect it. There's no governmental organization there that protects your intellectual property. So if you invent something, if you create something because you've educated yourself or you're passionate about something, whatever it is, you write a program and it's a great program, the limitation on someone else copying you is non-existent. Part of the reason why Chinese companies like to be listed in the United States stock market, one, it's an influx of money, but two, they get the protection of the U.S. government for their intellectual property. And that's one of the major issues of growth into the future for China. They need innovation in order to sustain that growth rate. Now, last quarter, during the whole quarter, we talked about the fact that, answering the question from the email.
Right.
We talked about the fact that we were going to have a very low growth rate for the first quarter. There was no doubt in either of our minds. There was no doubt in most economists' minds, although the average turned out they thought that was going to be 1% growth. It's only because there's some really crazy optimists out there as well as some people that have a more realistic view of the world. We had a massive snowstorm on the East Coast that lasted weeks and socked in a major portion of our economy. At the same time, on the West Coast, we had a strike and a negotiation issue that is now resolved. So this quarter, I expect to see a much higher growth rate.
Well,
the reason why I expect to see a much higher growth rate is because it's unlikely to snow 8 feet in Boston as well as the strike being taken care of on the West Coast.
Gene Epstein said something, I think, which was very, very significant about that in his column in Barron's that came out today. He said that since 2009, every first quarter has been abysmal growth. And he says it's a failure in seasonal adjustments. And every third quarter has had more growth than it really probably had.
Yeah, we had a 5% growth rate last year in the middle of the year.
So
that means then they're not seasonally adjusting.
Right.
They know that the demand is there for, you know, the fact that we can look at the West Coast and say that the dock workers and their employers were having this fiasco. And when they had a strike, we saw this big backlog of ships trying to leave and ships trying to show up to be unloaded or loaded. That's something we know about. We know that backlog exists, which means that we know that there's going to be growth associated with it. It's there. It's waiting. People have paid for it already, and it needs to be sold now. So that concept exists when we look at this quarter. And
well, I think, by the way, Gene Epstein said his forecast for 3.5% growth in the U.S. economy, GDP growth this year, is still in place, and I agree with it.
I agree with it, too. And that's pretty rare for three economists to be agreeing with each other.
That's because there are, in fact, some three-handed people. We have a caller on 773-1400, and if the phone works, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
They can't hear us. They've turned down the radio and
I'm going to make a try to switch this button again. Caller, can you hear us?
I can hear in our headphones that there's something wrong with that switch.
Yeah, there is. There's something wrong. Caller, you're on the air with a Personal Wealth Coach. If
Never
you
mind.
Can hear us, you're certainly welcome to get a talk.
I think that at this point we can't take that call. The phone systems are still broken.
Yes, we just have to. Well, they're sort of broken. Sometimes they're broken, sometimes they're not. But they're not working correctly.
Even a stop
Town Square,
clock.
Town Square voice. Media has determined that a partially broken phone system probably doesn't need to be replaced.
It's fixed.
Yes.
Well, they can talk to us. What else do we need out of a phone?
By the way, if you want to measure the U.S. economic growth in what I think is a more rational fashion, which is year over year.
Wait a minute. Did you say rational when you were talking economics?
Yes, but let's just simply say we decided to, instead of looking at the quarters and averaging the quarters together, and by the way, when you get a quarter's growth of 0.2%, which was what we had.
Well, it's annualized.
It's an annualized 0.2% based on the quarter. That was if all four quarters were exactly like the first quarters, which meant all four quarters would have to be winter, which doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense. You would have to be a strike in winter.
The whole issue of quarterly reporting stinks. But if you look at where the GDP was, the total gross domestic product of the United States, at the end of the first quarter versus where it was 1 year earlier, we grew at 3%. And this is the amazing thing. You graph this out and you look at it, and we've had a very, very consistent 3% annual growth, not annualized.
Annual.
Annual growth going back for about 5 years now. And that's pretty much what the economy should be doing according to economic forecasts and everything else.
Right. Well, you said it right. Gene Epstein said it right as well, that we're not seasonally adjusting properly. And what we're doing right now, we used to have some other things that we threw into the mix that we still throw them in, but they're not covering as many things. It's kind of like if we were doing a farm report, and for three quarters of the year, we said, nothing has been harvested.
That's right.
We are seeing abysmal growth. We don't know if the farms are going to make it because all we're doing right now is planting. We're not seeing any return this quarter from all this planting.
That's
what's going on? And then harvest comes and they go, whoa, we knocked the ball out of the park. Who expected this?
This is why when you talk about jobs, when the economists are non-farm payrolls, why? Because we're going to ignore agriculture. We don't need that anyway.
No, agriculture is silly.
So the point is that this obsession with quarterly numbers and the headline...
Wall Street and everywhere else.
It is, frankly, silly. You look at... And there's very, very little reporting of, okay, over the past year, the United States gross domestic product grew 3%.
No, you don't hear that because you only hear the quarterly.
Yeah, it's kind of like leading economic indicators that had come out and...
Well,
they're indicating...
They're not news, though.
They're indicating we have a nice growth rate.
What I've found is that leading indicators are not news because they haven't happened yet. They're just talking... It's kind of like,
they're olds.
Yeah. It's kind of like saying, looking at the statistics that we know of in Texas, I predict this year we're going to have about 3,600 deaths on the road.
There's another.
That's not news, but reporting that last year we had 3,600 deaths on the road is news.
And there's a very, very small, largely unreported, but critical number that came out relative to the end of the first quarter.
Was it the number one?
No, it's actually 2.8.
Oh, the number 2.8.
Today's 0.028.
Yes, today's... program is brought to you by the number 0.0028.
No, 0.028, not 0.00.
Okay, I will know what to paint on the
wall. So that's 2.8%. And 2.8% is how much wages, non-hourly wages in the United States, non-farm, why they don't do the farms, I don't know.
Well, because it's seasonal. And
right.
You hire a lot more people in the harvest time.
Non-farm, non-salaried workers
hourly
in the United
wages.
States at the end of the first quarter had wages per worker that were 2.8% higher than they were the year before. During a time period, we had less than 1% inflation.
That's about 25 cents an hour for a minimum wage person.
But this is the... There's not very many of those.
No, there's not very many. But 25 cents an hour, don't spend that all in one place.
This is the issue. This is the first time since 2008 that we have seen a measurable year-over-year wage growth. Now, I told you earlier one of the issues that we run into in the economy is if we make things ever more efficiently and employ fewer and fewer people to make them, sooner or later, theoretically, you run out of people to buy them.
Except that people keep inventing new things to make.
Right, and this is...
And that's why jobs keep growing, because when... Well, Ford was unemployed when he built his first motor vehicle. Dell was in college goofing off. So if we have time to build something and invent things, then we do them. And other countries, if they have time to do things they don't invent, they get radicalized.
So here's the good news. The good news is, unlike Europe, where personal income fell over the last year, personal income rose 2.8% in the last 12 months.
That's cool.
That's not headline news, but this is key.
That's a big deal. It's a huge deal, though.
This is why, over the same period, consumer spending, currently up 1.9% for the same period, is good news, because people are making more money. We are hitting the point. By the way, this is also an indication we'll probably get an interest rate rise sooner rather than later.
We've got more money being made and less money being, or slightly more money being spent, but not as much as being made.
People are still paying off debts, and they're still putting money in savings.
That's where it's going when it's not being spent.
But the key here, and this is one of the things that for people like us of an economic bent or perversion, as the case may be.
Just call us nerds.
Right. We run into this problem in that if we see wages going up, and we're seeing wages beginning to rise, that means there's a labor shortage. And believe me, there is a labor shortage. So the issue is that we got this labor shortage going on out there, which means that prices eventually are going to start to go up. So now is the time to start raising interest rates, but the dollar is already so high that if we start raising interest rates,
it's a complicated little thing. I'm glad Janet Yellen's in charge of that and not me.
Yeah, I would not want to be sitting on the Federal Reserve at this point. So whoever called gave up on us with good cause.
With good cause.
And anyway, so again, the bottom line here is the United States economy continues to function very well, despite all the headlines, is continuing to grow at a moderate rate of speed with no sign of either overheating or collapse coming.
There is a lot of sign of overheating and collapse in China.
Right. And something is going on in China. It's not real pleasant. And a lot is going on in Europe that's not real pleasant. And I'm really happy that we're here instead of there. But it's certainly a fascinating issue, the way things are working out in our favor. So it's still, it's actually a big plus. And interestingly enough, this labor market information that I just gave you, I couldn't find in the Wall Street Journal.
Well, how's that for interesting?
But I could find it easily.
The Wall Street Journal doesn't have economic news anymore.
Murdoch has ruined it, I think. But I could find it in Financial Times.
Right. In a British publication,
right,
we can find about the economic news of the United States.
You can find a lot more accurate, up-to-date economic news about the United States economy in the Financial Times of London than you can in the Wall Street Journal of New York City.
Right. If you look at financial news in the United States, most of what you get is advertisements or a flashy headline. And people are trying to figure out how to make money properly on the internet. And we were, during the break, showing each other the web pages for several of the places that we used to go regularly to get financial news that are now full of tabloid-esque headlines. And by tabloid-esque, I mean when any financial news publication says this is the best investment for the year, that's a tabloid, because best is hyperbole. That means that there are no other investments better than this investment, and they don't even know who you are. And that gets to be mainstream news now, because people are trying to figure out how to keep their newspapers from going under. They're trying to make a profitable source of news, and what they've discovered is if you tell people what they want to hear and you make it as flashy as possible, people will buy it. Well, we're looking for more boring news, and that's why we go to Britain. Britain is great for boring news,
which excites us tremendously. Speaking of trying to make money on boring news, we have commercials that we need to play. So we're the boring news, and the commercials are how the station makes money.
Lots of flash and gizmos.
So we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I would tell you the telephone numbers to call in here, but the phone doesn't appear to be working.
Well, we can tell you a number anyway. The number is 1.
Yeah, well, you can
there
send
you
us.
You have now heard a number.
You can send Jake an email at jake@tpwc.com. You're monitoring your email, right?
Yes, and you can send Jeff an email at jeff@tpwc.com, but he's not monitoring his.
Oh, I might. I will if you want me to.
And I highly recommend that you not send us an email while driving, as that may lead to more excitement than an economics radio program would normally provide.
Unless you're able to talk to your computer in your automobile while driving and tell it to send an email.
That always leads to arguments with me.
Really?
Yeah, I start talking to my phone to get an email going, and it's arguing with me, and I'm telling it to be quiet, and then it sends the email to the person I'm sending the email, telling them to be quiet, and it's not very nice.
That sounds amazing.
So if we get one of those emails, we will understand what's going on.
I have some news that is going to upset some people.
Oh, dear. So upsetting.
There's a survey done each year to determine what our immigrants are and who's when and how and so on. Each year, there's this major survey done. And I'm trying to look. I could look it up. But anyway, suffice to say that it is. Oh, the Census Bureau does this. And they do this by contacting people in a random but a very statistically randomized proper fashion all around the country. And in 2014, the share in the U.S. population of immigrants, that's people born in other countries, rose to 13.1% from 13% in 2012. Okay, this is the highest it's been since the 1920s. Back in the 1890s, it was up around 15% of the population were born in another country. But here's the key difference this time. The people in the United States who are from Mexico, who were born in Mexico, now these are legal or illegal immigrants, is lower than the people who were born in China. China has become the leading source of non-U.S. born persons in the United States. The Chinese numbers rise consistently each year, while the Mexican numbers have leveled off or started to decline. Now, here's the second issue. The people who identify themselves as Hispanic and still retain the language in the United States, the vast majority of them now, two-thirds of them now, were born in the United States.
Whoa! That's good news.
And this includes this is whether they're legal or illegal. This is just across the board.
Yeah, if they're born in the United States, that means they are legal.
That's right. But I'm just saying, people say, well, you didn't include the illegal immigrants. No, the illegal immigrants or whatever, illegal
aliens,
part of
the survey.
Whatever you wanted, they're in there too. And that's why there's such a big lag on getting this done. It's very difficult to get it right. But the Census Bureau's worked really, really hard on getting it right, and they've got consistent numbers for a long period of time. And the interesting part is, in 1970, in the United States, only 4.7% of the people reported being born in another country.
I didn't report being born at all.
But
I was born, and I think you reported me being born, actually. I didn't. I just screamed a lot.
This is the point. When we remember the good old days, we remember the days when relatively few people were from other countries and spoke different languages.
Right.
We're thinking back around 1970. A lot of people are thinking back around 1970, which is...
Or 60, and
which is a time period when I can really grasp.
Just go back a little bit further than that, and it's not the case anymore.
And so what we had is actually into the 1920s, we had about 15% of the country were born somewhere else and spoke another language as a primary language because their family was from somewhere else.
Yeah, but their organized crime, I have this on good authority, when they had gang fights, it was all singing and dancing. They'd snap their fingers, and they'd jump around at each other.
I think that might be inaccurate.
The Polish were attacking I saw this on stage.
Yes, I'm sure you did. Right.
Organized crime was a lot better back then than it is now.
It was more organized, less disorganized.
Right,
than it is
right. It was, they choreographed their organized crime. That's how you know how
organized
it was.
Organized crime, right.
Right, yeah.
Okay. But the point is, there's obviously a lot of political impetus to restrict illegal immigration from Latin America. This is the point. We're getting the immigration from Latin America across the board is now behind immigration from China. And I don't know how much of it's legal and how much of it's illegal. That wasn't covered in the survey. But the issue is we're fighting a war that is effectively over. A couple of things have happened. The economic situation in Mexico has improved enough that Mexico is now having illegal immigration from other countries.
From their south.
Right. And
less so from the north.
Our border security is a lot tighter. Our dealing with illegal workers in the United States is a lot tighter than it used to be. I've actually seen that anecdotally. Yeah.
None of this is a suggestion that the problem is fixed. It's just not as bad as it used to be, and it isn't necessarily because of actions that were taken. It's just from our economies acting the way they do.
This is the point. If you encounter people who are speaking another language to each other who are working in the United States, this is one of those things I was digging for. It's a very high probability that they're legal and were probably born here.
And it's also high probability that they're fairly well educated. This is something that is changing over time. And there's another thing that came out of the Census Bureau. There's a headline that was popped up in several places about millennials and how millennials are in the poverty bracket. A lot of them, you know, we're talking about all millennials right now, or the end of 2013, which is right now as far as statistics are concerned. The end of 2013... the millennial generation, 21% of them were in the poverty bracket.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stated with this...
And a significant number of them were illiterate.
No, the millennials are now literate.
Okay.
It's the people that have come after the millennials that we're looking at as being
illiterate.
Those really young people, they need to get a job and learn to read and stop pooping in their diapers.
You got it.
I mean, they just become a adding member of our society. Anyway, so the news comes out with a big headline, 21% of millennials are living in poverty. And it gets worse when you bring in, that's 21% of the parents in the millennial population. If you say non-parents, it's only 16% in the poverty bracket. And on average, it's closer to like 18%. So that's one in five millennials living in poverty. Well,
it sounds really bad until you think about it.
Yeah, it sounds horrible. It sounds like a great headline because it grabs our attention. But if you think about when most of our listeners are older, if you think about what income bracket you were in when you were in your 20s.
And you had your first child.
And you had your first child.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, they're showing these numbers as if they are you suddenly get poorer when you have a child. And in a sense, you do, because the poverty bracket says that if you have an income of, say, $18,000 a year, that's poverty.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an income of $25,000 a year, you're getting up above the poverty bracket until you have a child. And then that same income makes you poor.
Right.
Because for the poverty bracket, they say when you have a child, your expenses go up. Well, yeah, of course they do.
That's true.
But puts you in the poverty bracket. Well, that poverty bracket is there because the government gives resources to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's looked at.
Well, let me tell you, from experience, I can tell you it does make you more financially poor to have children.
We
have five as a long experiment with that. However, it's kind of like beating yourself with a hammer. When it stops, it feels so good.
Oh, yeah, that feels great.
You finally get rid of the five children and get them out of school. You're not poor anymore.
Right. So this concept where they're showing these two numbers as if they're completely separate, that 21% of millennial parents are in the poverty bracket, but only 16% of the non-parents. Well, if those 16%, or if those non-parents, not the 16%, but if a large percentage of the non-parents had kids, they would be in the percentage that is considered poverty. So statistics are dangerous, and they're particularly dangerous when you get someone really, really smart and understands the statistics, but then chooses to apply them in a way that sounds very bad. The whole concept behind this, the headlines are all about how paying a living wage is really important and we need to raise the minimum wage. And the problem with raising a minimum wage is it needs to happen after the market is already moving in that direction, or you get inflation. If the government gets ahead of the market and says we're going to raise the minimum wage in an area where that's not the going rate, you get inflation. It happens. If they're behind the market, then it's just a matter of getting rid of the kind of deadbeat businesses that are still trying to get away with paying that low rate.
So a couple of things as we close out the second hour, and we won't be here for the next 2 weeks. I wanted to, if anyone is actually listening.
I'm not.
That I think are very significant. One, this mass influx from China is largely very well-educated people.
Yes.
Which
is why people think that everybody in China speaks three languages and plays the violin.
The second largest influx, by the way, of immigrants is coming from India. Again, educated, well-educated people. And this is a real huge plus for the United States of America.
It's the same plus that got us where we are, in that the people that come to America tend to be the people that want to work really hard to get where they want to go.
And across the board, the American economy, the economy of the United States, is gaining momentum. It's becoming more healthy with each set of measurements that we see. And by the way, if you want accurate measurements on the economy, the headline measurements when they first came out aren't. Right now, we're just now starting to get accurate measurements from 2014. We haven't gotten them all yet.
No, and we won't for a while. It may be next year before we have all the accurate measurements from last year.
That's not to say that there's not some risk factors out there, but that's the good news. The United States economy is in great shape. The bad news is we are facing a world that is increasingly unstable.
Very increasingly. There's parts of the world right now that are right on the edge of falling apart.
And Russia is still doing some things that indicate that it might be getting ready to start a war. And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of indications that Russia is warming up in 4 to 5 years to actually wage a war. Get ready for that one, folks.
They've just increased their defense spending by more than 10%, while their budget for everything else dropped by 30%.
So we've got a lot of issues going on in the world today. The short term, fair warning, anyone who's listening to this, a bond crisis, a bond market crash is not an unlikely event. It is, I would give it a 50-50 chance that we will get some kind of panic in the bond market at some point in the next year or two that will spill over into the stock market. But the stock market side of it will be short and will simply be, it will be a panic but not a crisis. That's good to remember. If you're an investor, just ride through this thing. The world won't be coming to an end, but the news media will tell you the world is coming to an end.
If you have short-term uses for bonds, for the money that you have in your bonds, make sure they're short-term bonds. Don't hold long-term bonds if you need the money in a short-term scenario.
And one of the issues is the major money managers, institutions, and so on, are unloading longer-term bonds, and they're trying to do so as in an orderly fashion, but they're having trouble finding buyers. And I mentioned this last week, I think.
The reason why they're having trouble finding buyers is because in an orderly fashion, everyone is trying to sell their bonds,
and
long-term bonds.
Right now, some of the major investment banking places like Goldman Sachs are taking 30 to 60 days to find a buyer for blocks of bonds that institutions want to sell. Institutions are rather hesitant to sell them because it's so hard to sell them at this point. So we've got a lot of potential issues for a bond market crash. If you have longer-term bonds, very frankly, if you look in your portfolio and you've got bonds that are trading at a premium.
Yes. At a premium, it just means that they're trading at higher than the face value.
In other words, if you've got a bond that standard bond is at a bond, it's going to pay back exactly its face value if you sell it, is 100. If you've got something that's 104, for example, and you want to keep it because it's paying a really, really good interest rate, my recommendation, and this not specific, you need to talk to somebody specifically about it, but generally speaking, that 104, well, I can guarantee you, by the time it matures, that 104 will go to 100.
Yes. That's a guarantee, because that's what they're going to pay you at maturity.
So you're
going to
lose a significant amount of money if you hold it to maturity. Additionally,
and if you bought it at 104, you're getting principal back with your interest.
So the issue is, in between now and the time of maturity, if you had an emergency or if you had something happen and you need the money, there is a distinct possibility you could get a lot less than you paid for it. So just be aware we're in a really, really high bond market right now, and it won't stay high. It'll probably not just go back to neutral. It'll probably go low. And when it does,
they go in cycles. They go really high, and then they go really low, and then they go really high, and it's a longer-term cycle than what we see in stocks.
So just wanted to give you a heads up. If you anticipate in any way needing that money, you
in the short, now,
might want to take a hard look at, like, the institutions and the major money managers are doing right now. You might want to take a hard look at your bond portfolio, because the ability to sell it later may not be there.
Yeah, when I see a portfolio of a 75-year-old person that comes in and they've got a large percentage of their portfolio stuck away into 30-year bonds that mature in 25 or 30 years, and I look at them and I say, are you going to need this money before you're 100?
Yeah.
And they go, well, probably we would like to live off of that. And I say, well, are you going to take more than your interest payment? Oh, yeah, well, probably. And I say, well, you're probably not in the right place, because if interest rates go up, and that if is more like when interest rates goes up, the principal value of those bonds are going to go down. People won't want them as much because they're at a lower interest rate than what's paying today. Because of that, the price drops,
right?
Which means that if you liquidate between now and maturity, you're losing money.
There's a good article in Barron's. The Fed will raise rates. The only question at this point is when and how.
Is it June? Is it September? I tend to lean more towards what they said, June. The market thinks it's September.
And how they're going to raise rates will almost certainly be very different than anything we've ever seen before in their experiment with it. We don't have time to go into it this program, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. 2 weeks? 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Yeah, we're going to be gone for 2 weeks.
I'm going to be out taking pictures of deep space objects for the next 2 weekends. You have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure, and you can reach us off the air. We have voicemail during the weekend and real-life people answering the phone during the week, locally at 947-1111, or
you can reach that toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, listen to podcasts. You can read our philosophy, read our newsletters, all that good stuff. And if you please take your sanity medication before visiting the site, as it may not. And until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.